From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 13th day of January, 2016. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzulo. He's a global commodity analytics and consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. And a bit later in the program, we'll hear from Todd Hubbs, agricultural economist and grains analyst for the U of I. He'll discuss yesterday's USDA reports and his view of how those reports will impact the marketplace going forward. We'll do all of that and also check in on a really tricky weather forecast for the weekend. Lots of ice from Oklahoma all the way through Missouri and in parts of Illinois, says Eric Snodgrass. So stay with us as he helps us wrap up this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media right here at willag.org.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
It is the 13th day of January. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, looking into a holiday weekend. No markets on Monday in honor of Martin Luther King. The marketplace is closed. We'll talk now with Mike Zuzulo. He's a global commodity analytics and consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. Good afternoon to you, Michael.
Good to be with you again, Todd.
What are conditions like there? We're waiting for freezing rain to head our way.
Yeah, we've been very blessed. We were supposed to get something a little bit before noon on the model maps yesterday and on Wednesday, but everything has stayed south of us and even south of Kansas City. It looks like Missouri is the area that's getting hit the hardest, with St. Louis and Springfield kind of the two bullseyes right now. We are expected to develop, but I think we're going to stay under a quarter inch of ice through the weekend based upon the latest forecast, so that'll be very, very welcome news.
We appreciate you joining us yesterday afternoon, too, for the recording of Commodity Week, along with Arlen Suderman and Kurt Kimmel and Matt Bennett. I think that program went well. Folks who want to listen to it can do that right here on this radio station, or some of these radio stations, that is, in the second half hour or over the weekend, or if you want to go online at willag.org, willag.org, you can listen to it right now. But let's discuss, Mike, what happened in Chicago today, and probably ought to take up your review of yesterday's USDA report numbers, too.
I don't think there's a lot that's changed in the soybeans, Todd. We talked a week ago about the idea that if we were going to get a change in trend to the upside, it was going to have to be from yesterday's report. And we did get that, a 12.5% decline in U.S. ending stocks for beans and a 3.3% decline in world meal ending stocks was very, very welcome. And so I'm very thankful for the fact that even though puts have lost value, bought puts have lost value that I established earlier this week, I feel as though we've got a rally now in the soybeans that can indeed help the corn both now and later. And what I mean by that is that I think that we're still on the same path as we were a week ago, a month ago, 2 months ago, that the higher we go now in soybeans, the better the chances are 17 U.S. acres will be bought, cotton acres likely to be bought. This will help offset some of these very low winter wheat acres, lowest winter wheat acres since 1909. So between the wheat acres, the soybean cut and supply, and the yield decline in corn, which I think still needs to be more, but I was very thankful we got what we got, I think you've got a market now where you've brought the floor up, and it's going to give us better chances to get some more hedges in place. And I'm still eager to move fastest in the soybeans.
Just as a reminder, the yield decline in the corn down 0.7 of a bushel from 175.3 to 174.6. How much lower do you think it needs to go?
Well, I could see a number closer to 172.5 if some of the western Corn Belt states that USDA did take down. And they took Illinois down, too, which that really surprised me that they would come out and take that down. I thought that would maybe be one of the last things they do. But I think there's still more to come down in the western Corn Belt states. And so a 172.5 number wouldn't surprise me. I think even more importantly, and I was in touch with a couple people at USDA, one at NASS and one at the World Agricultural Outlook Board after the report came out, asking them why, with year-to-date export inspections of corn running almost 80% ahead of last year, why they haven't increased the exports and are maintaining a plus 17% versus the 15-16 marketing year. And their answer is very simple. They think that we will be robbed of export demand come February because of South America. And I think that's something to really watch, because it is a big, big difference between what we've been doing and what we have on the books, on the tables that USDA gave us yesterday. And I bring this up, Todd, especially from a standpoint that we're now in crunch time in Argentina. We saw today's market rally in the soybeans, I think in part building more weather premium because of the weather models in northwestern Argentina, Santa Fe, Cordoba, Buenos Aires, bean and corn areas are remaining very wet for the next 7 days, and the market's worried about that. In the beans, they're worried about it. They're not as worried about it in the corn. So I'll give you, for instance, we're at 16% stocks to use in U.S. corn right now. That compares to 12.7 last year. If you would just increase the exports 250 million bushels and say we only did 28% better than last year instead of 80%, that would take 250 off a carryover. That would add 250 to the ending to the total usage. That would take your stocks to use down almost two full percentage points, down to about 14.5%. I think that would get the market's attention very quickly. Right now, they see 16% stocks to use and think, like wheat, we don't need to buy wheat and corn. Let's stick with the beans after the report.
So a couple of things just for clarification. There is no real way or reason that USDA would update their yield number, at least not until, I don't know, we get to the end of the year or something like that. So unlikely to see that sometime sooner than that.
Correct.
And I mean marketing year, correct?
So yes, sometime, I think that's a great point. That's why I bring up the demand.
Yeah, and then the other thing is, I suppose what USDA may have been looking at was CONAB's numbers, and maybe their numbers too, on first crop corn area, which was up 3.2% according to CONAB earlier this week in Brazil. So that corn would be ready to come out pretty shortly, I guess.
I would guess that too. One thing, they didn't mention CONAB, they didn't mention the supply as much, because I brought up the fact that we are running $20 to $30 below a ton at the Gulf for nearby corn versus Brazil and Argentina. But they brought back the fact that going out into the spring months, we are now actually a little bit premium versus Argentina. And that is something that they're relying upon right now. But it just makes that currency relationship, both in Argentina and Brazil, that much more important, because we will vie for the same demand. And I think this is where it's going to be, in my opinion, historically, it's going to be hard to go from 80% to 70% increases versus the previous marketing year, since we're so far into the marketing year right now. But it's something definitely in February that will be important, along with their new baseline projections.
Anything else? We have maybe a minute left before I let you go for the day.
I think the biggest thing in the outside markets that we really want to watch is what's going on with the soon-to-be new president. And we touched on this on Commodity Week, and I'm glad Arlen brought it up and the rest of us had a little bit to say about it. But one thing that I really wanted to convey is the problem right now with the new Trump administration and the markets and the currency markets' mind is not so much that he's anti-trade or his people are anti-trade. It's that they've formally said, or said very clearly, they're going to make China and dub them a currency manipulator. That would be the issue that would make me most concerned about the dollar rallying and spiking and hurting our export potential just when we want to hang on to it. If they don't do that, Todd, I think actually the dollar could be a mostly sideways affair most of 2017, because we've baked in a lot of the Federal Reserve's three interest rate hikes for the month, for the calendar year, and we see that in the bond market. So I think these are the most important things to watch as we see President-elect Trump get inaugurated in the next few days.
Hey, thanks so much for being with us. Stay safe out there over the weekend, and have a good one.
You do the same, sir. Thanks for having me.
Mike Zuzalo is with Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting out of Atchison, Kansas, joins us here on the Closing Market Report for this Friday afternoon. In just a moment, we'll be joined by Todd Hubbs, commodity analyst for University of Illinois and agricultural economist, to take a look at yesterday's USDA reports in depth. Yesterday, the USDA released, Todd, a series of reports. There were four of them, in fact, including the final crop production numbers for the year, the grain stocks as of December 1st, the monthly supply and demand tables, and the winter wheat seedings. Let's go through some of the numbers, but not all of them. What did you find of most interest in any of them?
I felt the soybean reduction in acreage and yield was a little surprising for me. Not too surprising, but a little bit. I found that interesting. The December 1st grain stocks reports on use for corn and soybeans I found was interesting because it confirmed some of my thoughts about how much corn and soybeans we were using through the first quarter of the marketing year. And I felt the South American production numbers were interesting, the increase in Brazilian soybean production, and that the FAS held steady on Argentina production for both corn and soybeans.
Well, let's go through some of those. We'll start with the changes in the soybean production figure. They went from what, 52.5 to 52.1, I think, if I remember correctly, on yield. And they dropped based off of that, and maybe some other things as well. Not much, but a little bit. The ending stocks figure from 480 million to 420 million, a 60 million bushel drop, is a pretty good sized deal in the soybean market, though we still have a very large supply of soybeans. Do we have that much usage, and can we expect that 420 to stay kind of the same going forward?
It's still a big number, 420. They didn't change crush numbers or export numbers for soybeans moving forward. And when I look at the numbers right now, I think that's reasonable not to change those demand numbers. I don't see that number changing very much in the near future unless we see something happening out of South America to change export numbers. 420 million bushels, while it's a 60 million bushel drop for ending stocks from the December numbers, it's still a big number. So I know there was a nice reaction in the soybean markets yesterday on March prices for soybeans, but I still see some downside possibilities for soybeans moving forward.
All the numbers you gave me were from the supply side, so delve into the grain stocks figure for soybeans and how it works into this marketplace.
Well, the December 1st stocks for soybeans came in at 2.895 billion bushels. That number, you know, it's 181 million bushels larger than last year. So we have seen, because of the large crop, a larger stocks number. But through the first part of the marketing year, we have been exporting soybeans at a rapid pace. And we've been crushing soybeans at a decent rate. So the demand's there, but the crop is so large, it feels like it's a supply side issue still. And when I'm focusing on the supply side, we have a lot of beans out there. And there's more coming online from South America. So I know that the grain stock numbers for soybeans is large. The ending stock number is still very big relative to what we've seen in the recent past. So we're really going to need some demand bump in soybeans to get rid of some of this crop.
USDA decided to go one better than CONAB, which is Brazil's version of USDA. I think they were at 103, almost 104 million metric tons for the total size of the Brazilian soybean crop. USDA said, well, let's just round it up, and we're going to go to 104. It's a big crop one way or the other.
It is. It's 3.82 billion bushels, and they've set the yield in Brazil at 45.6 bushels an acre, which is it's a nice crop in Brazil, and a lot of this is driven from what's going on in the Mato Grosso region in the central west part of Brazil. They got the crop in early. They've had an ideal growing season, and they're producing beans at what looks like a record pace for Brazilian soybean production.
All in all, when you add it all up, it's supply, 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 supply. Demand has been good, but it seems to be supply-driven.
Demand is good. I mean, in a normal, well, not normal, but in a non-bumper crop year, we would see this demand, you know, driving prices more readily. But the world seems to be awash in soybeans right now.
Still, demand is good. And the price of soybeans has remained really strong.
It has. It has. I know I've written about it. Daryl Good's written about it. We feel like there's some downside risk in the market. Hopefully that doesn't show up for our farmers. But yeah, it's still staying there. And we saw a big bump yesterday. I just feel, when I look at the numbers, when we see what's coming in Brazil and the possibilities in Argentina. There's a little worry there on delayed planting and some flooding issues and not getting the soybean crop in. But when you take all the numbers together, despite China's voracious demand for soybeans, the world still has a lot of crop out there going through this marketing year.
I suppose this makes you cautious, or maybe aggressive, depending on how you want to view this, in your thoughts about marketing for old and new crop soybeans?
I would think about pricing some soybeans, especially if you're thinking about adding soybean acreage this year. You know, we see the price ratio at this point looking like a good year for soybean planting. There's been a lot of talk, 4 to 5 million more acres of soybeans with the reduction in corn. We've seen the winter wheat planting down. So we're looking at possibly a huge jump in soybean planting. If you're thinking about planting more acreage, you might think about, you know, pricing the additional that you're thinking about planting. I understand the market's dynamic, and we see it runs up and down as news comes in. But when I look out over the market year and into 2017-18, there's a lot of downside potential in soybean prices.
Anything from the corn numbers that you found of real interest? I know you mentioned at least the grain stocks figure was something of note.
Well, WASDE came out with a report yesterday. None of it really surprised me very much from the work I've been doing in the corn markets recently and looking at the numbers. They lowered feed and residual, 50 million bushels. I felt like that number was high from the beginning based on how much DDGs that have been produced from the ethanol crush and the amount of wheat out there for feed. So that didn't really surprise me very much. Last Monday, I wrote a report talking about the corn used for ethanol and how I thought they'd exceed $5.3 billion, and lo and behold, they raised the number of corn for ethanol use, 25 million bushels yesterday. None of those numbers really surprised me. I think we're seeing that as we move through the marketing year. USDA is sort of adjusting their numbers to what's going on the demand side. Exports are strong. We're milling a lot of corn for ethanol. And, you know, the livestock numbers are up, but 2.5 billion bushels was a lot for feed when you consider the whole space of feed available to livestock producers, in my opinion. So as we move into through the next part of this marketing year, I feel like corn's where it's at, the band of prices we've been moving around in the last few months. I don't feel like there's a lot of downside in corn. I think the numbers are where they're at. That we see the WASDE producing, the demand's good. You know, if we see a bad crop come out of Argentina and Brazil for corn, particularly the safrinha crop, the second crop in Brazil, if they have a dry spell and we lose that crop because they export a lot of that corn, we could see a run. But I'm pretty comfortable with the band of prices that USDA produced and the band we've been operating in. I don't feel like right now there's a lot of downside in corn.
So the market's found its equilibrium, in your opinion?
I wouldn't call it an equilibrium, but I feel like they're in a band, right? And they're comfortable in that band. And I feel like it's where we're going to be for a while until we get the prospective planting reports in March and we see where the acreages are for soybeans and corn. I think we'll probably stay in that band unless we see some dramatic developments in South America.
We've been talking with University of Illinois agricultural economist and commodity grains analyst Todd Hubbs. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Friday afternoon. It's the 13th day of January. We're now joined by Eric Snodgrass. He's at Agribull right here in Urbana-Champaign. Eric, thanks so much. Looks like there's a lot of weather we need to talk about.
Okay, Todd, let's get started with the most important thing first. There are ice storm warnings that cover almost all of Missouri and a big chunk of Kansas and Oklahoma. We have freezing rain advisories that stretch across the southern half of Illinois, Indiana, and Ohio. So for your listening area, points south of Champaign County, all the way down to about Carbondale, really have to be on the lookout over the next 24 to 36 hours for a pretty big event. And here's the setup. We have two high-pressure systems, one that is sitting over the northern plains, and another one that's sitting off the east coast of the United States. Now, both of these are basically working together to produce the storm. The high-pressure center sitting in the northern plains is providing all the cold, shallow air that we need near the ground to give us the below-freezing surface conditions. The one that's sitting off the east coast is pumping moisture from the Gulf of Mexico up over that cold air sitting next to the ground. And basically where those two air masses collide, we have this perfect setup where there's warm air aloft and cold air near the surface, which means as the precipitation falls, it has the ability to basically melt and then super cool and refreeze the moment that it hits the ground. So this is a pretty big setup. Now, we're expecting big accumulations across parts of Missouri and Kansas and Oklahoma, but we're going to see over an inch of ice that's forecast to accumulate. And this is going to be a bad situation. Remember, when it comes to weather, the deadliest part of weather is making wet and icy roads. On average, every year in the United States, there's over 1 million car accidents caused by wet and icy roads. So this is very, very important to understand. Now, this threat for the ice storm lasts through most of this weekend, so everyone just needs to be prepared and make smart decisions, especially if you're in parts of Missouri and Kansas and Oklahoma. Again, Illinois is not going to be in the heart of this ice storm, but we have to be on the lookout. Now, when we look at the longer range picture of what's going to happen, the jet stream has been set up such that a ridge is forming in the southeastern United States. And this does two big things. First, it keeps the eastern half of the country warmer than average in the coming days. The second thing that it does is it likes to divert the track of the next few low pressure systems more to the north-northeast rather than through the heart of the country. So there's another system that's developing in the Texas Panhandle early next week. Instead of going off toward the east coast or towards the northeast, this thing's going to move toward Minnesota. And that north-northeast track means that Monday through early Wednesday, this system's going to be a rainmaker for the eastern half of the Corn Belt. But the big story with the weather so far this year has been the really, really strong Pacific jet stream. In fact, weather reporting stations in the Sierra Nevada mountains in California are having their wettest year on records, and some places have received more than 10 feet of snow in the last couple of weeks. Some of the higher elevations, it's way more than that. Lower elevations, they've got over more than 10 inches of rain. Now, is this going to bust the California drought? Well, it's something we got to watch, okay? Because California leads the nation in the production of over 40 different fruits and vegetables. So the whole country has to pay attention to the weather in California. The answer is this isn't going to completely bust the drought, but it's going to make their next water year, their next growing season, really good. So expect big production out of California if they continue to get this rain to help fill the reservoirs, put a big snowpack for irrigation in the coming weeks. Now, this pattern that we've been seeing with the strong Pacific jet and the southeast ridge isn't going to break down anytime soon. So that's going to eliminate the really, really cold air from the polar branch of the jet stream invading into the United States. We're going to have a lot of active weather, a lot of low pressure systems moving across the area for the next 10 days. But a lot of these are going to have a more northerly trajectory, which means we don't tend to get a lot of snow out of those. But the good news is, this is really going to help with the drier conditions we've been discussing in the central United States, helping to erase the drought that's been forming there. And I told you, I was really getting concerned about those drier conditions, because if they persist into spring, it could be an indicator of maybe some stress on the upcoming growing season. But it looks like over the next few weeks, we're going to get a lot of precipitation in the Midwest, in the central plains, that's really going to work hard on erasing some of the deficits in the precipitation. And what's really interesting to kind of finish this up is that here in central Illinois, we have had a pretty cold winter so far, very normal in terms of temperatures, but we're right now sitting about a third of our typical snowfall amounts, because each time the big systems come through, they keep going to our north and east. We get rain followed by a big blast of cold air that's not bringing in the snow. So again, to do a quick wrap up, if you live in the Central Plains, if you live in the Midwest this weekend, be on the lookout for ice. Pay close attention to your local National Weather Service offices. Pay close attention to any watches, warnings, and advisories that are posted, because getting out in ice storms like this can be extremely dangerous when driving. But remember, warm air is coming very quickly after this system comes through, which means this is not going to persist for a long time. So I hope we don't see a complete run on all the milk and bread at all the grocery stores just in fear of this ice storm.
All right. Hey, thanks so much. We appreciate it. That, of course, is Eric Snodgrass. He's from Agribal, from right here in Urbana-Champaign. You have a great and a very safe weekend. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason.